What? What do you want from me?
It's actually, really is hard, carrying the weight of the world on your shoulders and saving the whale and organizing summits between world leaders and that sort of thing. But we enjoy our work and,
this is the worst!
You can reach, but you can't grab it.
All right, so we're back for another round of Worst Of. So, of course, joining me is my co-host and the man behind the plan of the idea of Worst Of, Brian Sword from the Double Stop. Hey, Brian.
Hey, BJ. Happy to be back. Always happy to talk shit about a band.
Yeah, you love it. And joining us today, we've got another $50 contributor to the Nashville Rock and Pod Expo. Just like last week, on last week's episode, I had two contributors of $50. We did No Shame. And this week we're joined by Randy. Do you want the W in your name or not? Should I just call you Randy Hall or Randy W. Hall?
W, because ever since eighth grade, that's what I've gone by, so why change now?
But there's another Randy Hall in SAG. You know, that's why, like Michael J. Fox, that's why everybody always has to use
big
crickets. I got some crickets on that. Yeah, Randy, you've already been on the podcast twice for free, and you paid $50 to be on this episode, so I think that means you owe me $100.
Yeah, just come see me at my booth at the Nashville Rock and Pod Expo.
Yeah, right. Randy is a co-host of a podcast called That Dandy Classic Music Hour, and of course you're going to join us since you live about a half hour away from where the expo is going to be, right?
Oh, they're coming to me. Can't beat that with a baseball bat.
Yeah, exactly. So all three of us are going to be together down there for the expo in August.
Oh, and, sweet.
And this episode, Randy contributed $50, like I said, to the expo fund, which we're almost to $8,000. So we still got a little bit to go to reach our goal, but I think we'll make it eventually. We're getting there.
Yeah, like about 2 months now at this point.
Yeah, so. Yeah.
People are going to start, like, feeling the burn to donate. I could just tell.
So, Randy, you donated $50 so that we could do Worst Of U2. This was your choice to do U2. And I tried to convince you to stick to 80s U2 because that would have been a little more... It would have been harder to pick for me.
Because I'm a big U2 fan, BJ. That's why I did this. But, like, any, like even your closest family, you know, you can always pick out their faults. And you can actually delight in their faults if you know them well enough. And that's kind of how I feel about U2. They get a lot of hate out there in the general rock and roll population. And I can kind of understand. But for me, I thought it was such a good idea that Swordsman came up with over there that I figured it was worth throwing $50 out there and basically sponsor That Dandy Classic Music Hour. If you want to hear us talk glowingly about U2, we have two programs about. We have the Joshua Tree Show and an Octung Baby Show that we did where we speak highly of the band. So I'm going to temper that out and balance out the force by talking shit about my five least favorite songs.
Yeah, I see a lot of negativity towards U2 from heavy metal, hard rock heavy metal fans.
I just, you know, it's funny, like, it's kind of like Metallica when they started going the Black Album route. Like, there's a divide amongst a lot of U2 fans from, like, the Joshua Tree loving U2. And then when they changed with Octung, a lot of people didn't get the irony and didn't follow them. Just kind of swore them off. And they've always taken themselves really seriously. So they kind of play into that. But you probably won't find four nicer, truer people in the world of rock and roll music as people. So... I think it's just, I don't know, they're just trying to be assholes, because I think even though Bono can be self-important, self-aggrandizing, I think these guys are just solid guys, and they make good, solid rock songs and albums, usually, but we're going to talk about the other side of that.
Yeah, I think Bono and Eddie Vedder have a lot of similarities. Like, I was watching Eddie Vedder at the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, and you just get uncomfortable. I think Eddie Vedder is a very cool guy, and I like Eddie Vedder, but when he starts talking, you start getting uncomfortable, and he goes over the edge of, like, pretentiousness, and Bono does this. has done the same thing over the course of his career, where he doesn't have a good filter, and he can come off as very pompous and pretentious sometimes, where, you know, I don't think he really is as bad as he comes across sometimes, but he just has a problem with that, with being kind of pompous sometimes, and then it haunts him. It's haunted him ever since, you know?
Well, I got two thoughts on what you just said in theory there. Number one, I think those guys are drunk a lot. And number two, I think you have to be an egomaniacal kind of person to get to where they've gotten in a certain sense. So, and there's that, but they care about people, and they're trying their best. It's just that the worst parts of their personality do come out when they drink too much. So.
I have a story I'd like to share because I witnessed it with my own eyes.
Go for it.
For the, not this current tour, but the last tour, so that would have been Songs of Innocence tour, I filmed them.
Oh.
The opening night of their tour was in Vancouver, and I filmed the EPK for it, which basically was, we're filming the show, editing backstage, and sending it off for morning Europe time for it to hit the news. So the news all have footage of it. So basically what we did is we took the feed from the screens, and then, but those are all close-ups, and we did wider shots and crowd shots, and we had an editing station directly behind the stage, and we're putting it together. So I got the little peek under the skirt back there, right? And I got heard all the stories, and you know, at first it was hearing people talk about, yeah, when they were rehearsing in a different stadium, they're there for a couple of weeks rehearsing, and all the security guards had to have their backs to the stage. They weren't allowed to turn around because there was fear they would snap a photo of the stage in their cell phone and put it on Facebook, and then the secret would be out of what their stage was, and all the, you know, stories like that where I'm just like, oh, geez, you know, pretty douchey, but fine. But then they arrived for the show, and again, this was the first night of the tour, and they arrived backstage, each separately in their own cars. And then Bono gets out, and he sees a roadie. And it turns out that all the crew have been on every tour for years. And there's a scruffy-looking roadie who looks like a biker. And Bono hops out of the car, jogs over, and gives him a huge hug. And, Tony, how's it going? Oh, great to see you. You know, it was just like, when nobody else was looking, when the cameras weren't there, Bono was actually a really good guy. And everybody freaking loved him. And the rest of the band, like the crew, loves those guys. So I was like, okay, I'm going to give Bono a bit of break. And I'm not even a big fan of that band. But seeing some of that stuff, I'm like, okay, he's actually a pretty cool guy.
Yeah, I mean, I've never heard anything like that was terribly sensational about him. And you think you would over the course of 30-plus years. So your story is actually very heartening. I was waiting for it to go the other direction.
No,
so.
No, and that's what I was expecting. You know what I mean? Honestly, all of the guys. And the other thing that I thought was really funny was when they came off stage, what's his name, the drummer? Forget his name. He hops in his car, just left Pac Stadium. Everybody's going nuts. Everybody's still screaming. Hops into his car, pulls up a newspaper, and starts reading a paper as he drives off. Like it was nothing.
Yes, yeah. Well, it is nothing to him. Yeah.
It was amazing.
Yeah.
And his dad, there was concern because his dad died, so he had to miss the final rehearsals, and he flew back and landed like an hour before the show. You know, so his state of mind would have been out there too, because he had just lost his father.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, the fact that he showed up at all is a testament to his professionalism.
Yeah, because everybody back behind the scenes were going nuts, because it was like, oh shit, you know, dude's dad just died, he's going home. You know,
Poland's the, like, he's the one that they always have to convince to go on tour again. I think it really pains him to drum these days. It's really taking a toll on his body.
Yeah. A lot of older drummers, it's the same problem.
Yeah.
Anyway, that's the nicest thing I'm going to say about you two all night.
Yeah, I definitely do not get a bad vibe from Bono, but I can also understand how he got his reputation, especially if you watch Rattle and Hum and different things, you know. But then he was young, and I mean, I always say he's been Bono since he was like 16 years old. It's like, you got to put yourself in his headspace of, you know, I mean, he's lived a very different kind of life from most people. And so, you know, he's got his own struggles with that kind of thing, but I bet he's a very cool person if you, you know, meet him.
I also got to see some rehearsals, and that dude sang his ass off, even on an empty stadium.
Oh, yeah. But like you're saying, BJ, like the only job he's ever held is rock star.
Right. Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. I mean, he was so young. I mean, they were all still in their teens, I think, when the first album came out. So, I mean, you got to think about it from that perspective. But, yes, I mean, yeah. So U2 formed in Dublin in 1976 when they were all 15 and 16. I think two of them were 15 and two of them were 16. And they were called Feedback, and then they were called The Hype. And by 1980, so I guess 1980, they were like 18, 19, 20 when they signed the record deal, put out the first album. They had an interesting career trajectory because they were, you know, very well known and critically acclaimed and built a nice following. But then they were one of those bands where they put out an album that just went into the stratosphere. You know, the Joshua Tree just became like, they became as big as a band could possibly get, really, at that point. And which, of course, that translated into a film, as it usually goes when a band becomes as big as U2 became. They made a movie, and that was a big mistake, really. I mean, it was to follow up the Joshua Tree with Rattle and Hum was not, probably, you know, not the best thing they could have done, but that's what happened. And so then it ends up that, you know, Achtung Baby doesn't come out for, what is it, 4 years after the Joshua Tree? And so, but of course, that was not quite as big, but almost as big as the Joshua Tree. Massively, hugely successful, and kind of, that was the first time. Well, I guess Joshua Tree is kind of a reinvention, but they really reinvented themselves on Achtung Baby, and then they've kind of kept reinventing themselves, but in a bad way, after Achtung Baby. In my opinion, after that, they really went to shit. I think it's astonishing how horrible those two albums after Achtung Baby are, in my opinion. And so that's going to make up most of my list there. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Holy shit. It's some horrible shit on those records.
The reason that I feel a little different is, for me, it's kind of nostalgic, because I got into the band as a junior, senior in high school when Achtung came out. So that was my entry point. And I got way into Achtung Baby. And of course, I backtracked from there. And then Zooropa came out. And that was like the first new U2 album that came out when I was a fan. So I wasn't thinking critically about them yet. So for me, like, I have a lot of warm memories of the Zooropa era. But I can definitely like somebody crap on pop.
Holy shit, yeah. I was a freshman in college when Zooropa came out, and they played the stadium. When I was a freshman, they played the stadium here in Madison, and everyone went to that show except me. But it was, I mean, they were so huge. It was crazy.
I saw him on the Achtung Baby tour twice, fortunately, and I've seen him about four times since then. I even saw him here in Nashville in 2011 on my birthday, July 2nd. They played in Vanderbilt Stadium, of all places. They've always been a really good live band. No matter what you think of them, they always do put on a show for people.
You know, I have all the U2 albums on vinyl up through Rattle and Hum, and I'm a big fan of all the early U2. With or Without You is one of my favorite songs of all time. I love that song. So, and I like a lot of Achtung Baby, most of it, really. And but that's where I really check out. I mean, they have their moments after that, but yeah.
Yeah, for the most part, I like All That You Can't Leave Behind. That's the last album that I liked. And that was the first one I'd liked in a long time.
Yeah, was that the one after Pop, right after Pop?
Yeah.
You know, there were some good songs on How to Dismantle an Atomic Bomb, but it was kind of had a generic feel, like they were, I mean, like, what was the first song of that?
Vertigo.
Yeah.
Vertigo. I mean, lost me at Vertigo.
That song is fine, but it seemed like kind of generic. And
it's not on my list, but it could have been.
Oh, really? I don't mind that song, but it seemed like they had lost, I mean, U2 were had a very unique original sound, and then they kind of, it seems like they just kind of tried to sound more mainstream or something on that record, and they lost a lot of their, but you know, they kept reinventing themselves after starting with Achtung Baby. It was like a different every time they were just trying to, you know, I guess they were trying to be revolutionary or something, but it didn't work for me. I don't really know what they were doing when they were making like pop. And well, obviously, I guess all that you can't leave behind, they kind of go back. They tried to go back to their old sound to a certain extent, huh?
Yeah, I think so, and I think it worked.
Yeah. Yeah, because pop was kind of a failure commercially, I think, especially considering how huge they were.
Oh, yeah, pop was a huge disappointment at the time.
Yeah, yeah.
It's been evaluated, and a lot of the critics still say it sucks, so.
Yeah, I agree with them.
Pop's a real hit or miss record. I'll definitely go there. All That You Can't Leave Behind, it is the first 8 songs I think are really good on that, and then it loses steam after the 8th song. No Line on the Horizon, I could have made an entire list on that album. I mean, that album just really, I don't know where they were in their heads or what was going on, but that album sounds more dated, and it's not even 10 years old than almost all of these albums put together. I just don't get it.
What year did Pop come out? Was it like 98?
7.
97? Yeah. I was working in a record store then. I remember when it came out, and it's the record industry was so different then. And we would just get way too many. We would get way too many copies of shit like that. And then we would just have whole rows. You know, there'd be like 50, 60, 100 copies of those fucking CDs just sitting there. I remember Midazolam by Duran Duran came out, and we got like 200 of them in or something and sold maybe 2. And then it was just, they were all just filling the racks, you know?
Yeah, like I got Pop the day it came out because, you know, I was such a huge fan. And I really like wanted to like that record, and I still do like songs off that record. Like I enjoy Gone and Mofo, but that's a tough one, man. That's a tough record for me.
Well, you just said you like Mofo, and that's a perfect segue. I might as well kick off my worst of list with my number 5 song, which is called Mofo, from the album Pop. And
yes! Well done!
And I wrote that it starts out sounding like Mofo. It starts out sounding like the theme of like an 80s TV show about a renegade cop or something, but it never goes anywhere. So it's just like repetitive bullshit with Bono making shit up over the top of it. Like, it's an example of, like, jamming as opposed to songwriting. Like, let's just... Okay, just keep playing that. Just keep playing that. And then I'll just make shit up over the top of it. And, you know, it's not a written song. It's a jam song, which it never really does much for me. Just the repetitiveness and the lack of, really, the craft of a melody. Bono... I found some website where they have, for a lot of the songs, they have quotes from the guys from the band, and Bono called this song Electronic Blues Death Rattle. Whatever the fuck that means. I guess it isn't an accurate description of the song, but it doesn't sound like something I'm going to want to listen to. Electronic Blues, I mean, fuck off with that. So yeah, my number 5 song is Mofo.
Well, I think a lot of YouTube fans may agree with you, especially purists. For me, turn that shit up loud.
I just want to point out that is a really shitty song. it's absolutely terrible. It's unlistenable.
I just hate repetitiveness that without like a... I mean, I guess, you know, other people could say, well, you just like the same thing, because what I like is something that exists within the confines of the structure of the verse, chorus, verse, bridge, you know, that's what I want. And there's a lot of great things you can do within that framework, but that's the framework I like. And when you don't have that framework, when all you have is like some meandering verse and that's the whole fucking song, that's just not going to do much for me. So
the lyrical couplet, holy dunk, space junk coming in for the splash, white dopes on punk staring into the flash, looking for baby Jesus under the trash, that doesn't do it for you.
Do you have that memorized, or were you reading that?
I'm reading it verbatim.
5 minutes and 47 seconds of the same crap.
Here's what I think. I think Bono made that shit up as he sang it. That's what I think. Just like, loop that. I'm going to start singing. Oh, we're done. Next song. Am I still your sister? You know I'm waiting for so long to hear you say so.
My first song, which is going to go maybe against what I said before, but I think it's because I'm more familiar with this record than some of the other ones. So I'm going to pick on All That You Can't Leave Behind right away, even though in general that is an album I really like. I'm going to choose the song Wild Honey.
Oh, you don't like that one?
My notes are pedestrian snooze fest. I just find it boring and sleepy.
Like a blast of summer, man.
See, I love this because, like, we're offending him, JBJ. This is great.
yeah, this is exactly what you wanted to do with these episodes.
Thanks for good radio.
Just the idea of a summer song turns me off because that always is shitty. You know, oh, it's the song of the summer, and it's always some horrible shit every time they say that.
But like, I like it when he goes into the hole. I sing along with it.
Oh, God bless you for doing that on the internet. Did I know?
Yeah, I like that song. Way worse songs than that.
All right, well, tell us one.
Tell us one of the worst songs from a fan.
Well, I'm just going to start with the worst here, because there may be multiple offenders from this piece of shit album. But the worst album, it's kind of a toss-up between October and then this abortion of an album they did in 2009, the No Line on the Horizon. I could just throw a dart on the board and pick a winner here. Let's just go with Fez Being Born.
Ah, damn it!
That is still Mr. Swordsman.
You did my next one!
damn
it. I should
pick a different one. I got all kinds.
No. No, please. I want to hear why you also chose that piece of shit song.
My notes say it's a self-indulgent and taxing piece of crap. They're like reprising the rallying cry from Get On Your Boots, which was tenuous in the first place. Like, I don't even know if I buy what they're doing in Get On Your Boots, let alone reprising it in this piece of crap. The first minute is totally different from the rest of it. It's all bad. It's a meandering, overly long bore. And then the keyboard, God bless it, man. They're so new agey and pompous. I'm looking for John Tesheriani to be somewhere within the vicinity of this piece of shit. Fuck this song. Sorry. I don't even know how this gets past quality control. Piece of shit.
BJ, I just want to point out that Randy is awesome.
Fine.
I think that song was on my short list, and so was Get On Your Boots. That was on the short list too, but
I don't even like that.
But you know, you said self-indulgent, and I think that's a description of all bad U2 songs. I mean, that's one of the things that makes a U2 song bad, is that they're just self-indulgent, and they're a lot more fun to record than to listen to, I think, which is that jamming element that I was talking about, that, you know, it's a lot more fun for a band to jam than it is to listen to a band jamming, you know what I mean? So,
absolutely.
My number four. Oh, this one. See, I had to go through and listen to the other albums to figure out the shitty ones.
Four, man. Is that? Are you gonna kill some sacred cows here?
No, but this one I knew right away it was gonna be on my list. Whereas all the rest of these songs, I had to go through and find them because I hadn't really you know listened to the albums much. The albums after Achtung Baby. So, but the song. U2's tribute to B.B. King from Rattle and Hum, fucking When Love Comes to Town, which is so generic and stupid and just embarrassingly bad. And I went on YouTube, I found a clip where B.B. King is like, "You're mighty young to write such heavy lyrics," but the lyrics are a bunch of bullshit. I mean, "I was there when they crucified my lord. I held the scabbard when the soldier drew his sword. I threw the dice when they pierced his side. But I've seen love conquer the great divide." What the fuck does that mean?
Town, I'm gold. Yeah, that's good. It's all right. It's all right.
A bunch of images strung together that doesn't actually mean anything. But I mean, I wrote down B.B. King should have been insulted that they wrote such a generic, formulaic, dumb fucking song and said, "Hey, this is the kind of piece of shit song you like to sing, right, B.B.?" I mean, it's an insult to him. It's like, oh, this is a B.B. King song, this generic piece of shit. Ugh, it's so horrible. So,
I'm not gonna say that's a great song.
Ugh, it's pathetic. It's a pathetic, I mean, it's barely even a song. It's like you would hear 20 seconds of it in a toilet paper commercial. Or so that's about the level of quality it is.
That was a single, too.
Oh,
that
I
was
know.
A hit.
It
was
oh, a... It's so fucking bad. Before love came to town.
All right, my turn.
Yeah.
Well, my number four was Randy's number five. Fez Being Born. And it's funny because one of your comments was almost word for word for mine, which was over 5 minutes of boredom. And that's pretty much what you said. You know, it's just, and that's going to follow my theme for this evening.
Yeah, over 5 minutes.
My theme for this evening is overlong and boring.
Yeah, right.
All the songs I chose are way too long and way too boring.
That was your Led Zeppelin criticism as well. So I know what you don't like. Long, boring, meandering bullshit.
Yep.
Yeah, I feel the same way.
I mean, anything that reminds me of John Tesh or Yanni is fuck. That's basically that's how I feel about it. All right, so I'm going to go to a different album to mix it up here. I'm going to go to October, which I don't know if you guys know how October came to be, but in Detroit, Michigan, where I hail from originally, U2, Bono was writing a lot of the lyrics for the in a notebook, and apparently it got stolen in Detroit. So when it came time to get into the studio to record October, Bono had to rewrite all the lyrics, and a lot of that back half of this album shows that strain, because the last three songs, I mean, you can pick any of the last three. But I'm going to go with the one that I find the worst has got to be Stranger in a Strange Land. I mean, there's not a single hook in that fucking song. It doesn't sound finished. I say it's formless slog, and it literally gave me a headache driving down the road this morning. So anything from a band that I like that can literally make me reach for Advil liquid gels, I'm going to fucking put on my list. And I'm going to swear. So hopefully you can put the explicit tag on this episode. Because that is... Why was this on the album, Bono? And I know why you never play it live. It fucking sucks.
Well, I said I had a list of 21 songs that I whittled down. And that song was on my list. But just because I you know, anything that I thought was shitty from any of the albums, but... You know, the worst, like, post-punk U2 song is way better than the worst fucking U2 doing dance, fucking industrial, whatever shit. So there's no way anything from October was gonna beat out some of that other garbage.
Yeah, I get it. I can't blame you.
But yeah, October is a total sophomore slump. Like, compared to Boy, it's not even close to as good, so...
Well, it makes sense now that you heard what happened, doesn't it?
Yeah. Well, didn't the same thing happen to Steven Tyler? Doesn't he tell a story? He left the lyrics in a cab or something for... I forget which
album. I thought
Bono
did the same thing later on, like with his laptop or something. Didn't he do that again, lose all his lyrics?
Well, you know, I don't know. It's definitely possible. He, from what I've gathered as a fan of his over the years, is he's pretty fucking absent-minded, so...
So my third, is it my third worst? Yeah.
Yeah.
It's Dirty Days. So is that from Zooropa or Pop? I didn't write it down.
Zooropa, baby.
Zooropa. So it's four notes for over 2 minutes with Bono mumbling over four notes just repeating for 2 fucking minutes. So it's just complete self-indulgent bullshit. Like, something, they could have just made this shit up as they recorded it. Like, and not even have written it. That's how it sounds to me. The Edge starts playing four notes over and over, and then Bono makes some shit up, and that's the song. That's how it sounds. Just, like, total nonsense. So,
I think the last 2 minutes are just him singing The Days Running Away Like Horses Over the Hills. That is literally the last 2 minutes of the song.
Yeah, it's like barely even a song. It's just insulting to even have to listen to. So
there's some good lyrics in here. I like some of these lyrics. But yeah, I could see why it would tax somebody who's not fully invested in this band, definitely. That would be on my back quarter of YouTube songs.
And then Bono said it was influenced by Bukowski. That just fucked.
Sure, he takes a compliment.
Yeah, the song is like, there's that part in Ham on Rye where Bukowski talks about how when he mowed the lawn, his dad would go out there and get on his hands and knees and look for blades of grass that were longer than other blades of grass. And that sounds about as exciting as this song. So that must be the Bukowski influence.
I don't even understand. If you need someone to blame, throw a rock in the air, you'll hit someone guilty. For Father to serve in one land has begun. A world that's never turned Father to Son.
My third is 5.5 minutes long, boring, and that's when I really caught into my theme, when I realized, my God, all I'm picking are like songs that put me to sleep by this band. So I chose Grace.
Oh God, yeah.
Yeah, I got one that Randy agrees with. So that's from All You Can't Leave Behind, yeah.
Well, I said the first 8 songs on that album are good, and then it just peters out.
Yeah.
Grace, I mean, if you named your daughter Grace, I'd be embarrassed for you, because this song is that bad. It hurt my heart not to put it on my list, so I'm so glad you picked it.
Oh, it's just so bad. And again, this is an album that I really liked, so I'm a bit more familiar. But this song, I was just, oh, God. So that was pretty obvious one for me to put on here. All right, what's your number 3, Randy?
Oh, my God. Okay. Miami. Just what the F? WTF.
God damn it.
Fuck, man.
That's my number 1. What the fuck?
That's my number 2.
Well, we know that's a shitty fucking song, then.
I can pick an alternate. I got lots of them. You guys want that one?
No. You've got it out first. It's yours. Say your piece.
It just shows how bad it is.
Yeah, all 3 of us, and very high on our list.
So bad.
That's amazing for this a band with this many songs.
Yeah, right. Yeah, how many albums do they have?
So like 12 or 13 studio albums.
Yeah, imagine.
Like that.
I mean, that's there's so many songs that the one song is in the top three of all of our lists. That says something.
That's amazing.
This piece of shit. If I were from my, I have to disavow all knowledge of this piece of shit. What is he talking about throughout the entire thing? Like, he just dances around, you know, Miami, my mammy. I mean, just, oh, he can't pick a lane and stay in it. He's all over the place. And the band, the band sounds like it's going through the motions. And it sounds like it was like a really bad night of drinking in Miami, and they wanted to pay homage to it. And it was like they drank too much of the hair of the dog that bit them. Just an abortion of a song. Oh, it's awful. Through and through. Did I get it all?
Yeah, you know.
I guess we're just holding out for our turns.
Five minutes of sleepiness. You know, it's my number two. 5 minutes of sleepiness. Like, it's just so boring. And there's just no redeemable qualities about this song. It's all the way through, it's just terrible. It never should have made it on an album.
Yeah, and then you get the really current reference to a Handycam. So that holds up really well 20 years later. When everybody's taking film with their phone, he's talking about Sony Handycams and shit. And the instrumentation is just a nightmare. So BJ, what's your number two, bro?
My number two, I think it's from Zooropa. It's called "Daddy's Gonna Pay for Your Crash Car." Is that from Zooropa?
Yeah, it is.
Horrible fucking nonsense.
Oh, terrible.
Repetitive bullshit. I mean, I'm using the same insults for every song, but once again, over a minute of just four notes with garbage percussion underneath. I hate the percussion on those records. And it's 5 minutes and 20 seconds.
Yeah.
It's like they saw a Buck Rogers show and they tried to make an album based on the Buck Rogers show. And it's like all that quote-unquote futuristic technology ends up looking super retro in hindsight.
It's just the same things I've said about other songs. It sounds like a jam session. Doesn't sound like a song that was written. It sounds like a song that was just made up as it was recorded. And it's just completely self-indulgent and pointless and over 5 minutes long and incredibly repetitive with very little structure as far as melody goes. So exactly the kind of thing that I would never want to listen to. So
easily could have been on my list. I hate that song.
Yeah.
Fanfare prior to the song, because that's kind of interesting. And then that damn, that boom, boom, that like that steel drum sound, I don't even know what it is. It's like reverb to the max, and it's super annoying and repetitive, as you say, BJ. Yeah, this one's not great. If I had to pick a song off of here, it'd be a tie between "Daddy's Gonna Pay for Your Crash Car," and "Some Days Are Better Than Others."
My number two has already been taken, so I'm out. Miami
moons
from
over my hammy.
Just awful. So we've already covered that piece of crap. So you can just put like add like a snoring sound effect right here instead of playing the song a second time.
I bought two new suits. Miami. Pink and blue. Miami. I took a picture of you. Miami!
That's my number one. My number one pick as worst U2 song is Miami, which I wrote. It's a full minute of only drums and Bono mumbling. So that's not a good start.
We're around here chopping and changing, surgery in the air, print shirts and southern accents, cigars and big hair. We got the wheels, petrol's cheap, we only went there for a week. Got the sun, got the sand, got the batteries and the handycam.
And, you know, the idea of meandering isn't necessarily bad. Like, I was thinking, an example is the song One, I think, is a brilliant song. It doesn't have a structure. One is amazing because it doesn't have verse, chorus, you know? It's totally a meandering melody, but it's great. So Bono was capable of doing that kind of song and making it great. But, ugh. When he does this self-indulgent shit like this, which is like a poetry slam or some kind of shit, you know, it's I mean, really, you could go up on stage with a drum and have the guy play the drum and just read a fucking stupid poem, and that's what this song sounds like. It's really fucking horrible. So
some cigarettes, no big deal, I know the score. What's it got inside the case? I want a close-up of that face. Here comes car chase.
I don't know, BJ, I don't know how this, my number two, escaped you. Everything you just said applies to the song that's my number two. Breathe off of No Line.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
This song is just pretentious. It's what experimentation sounds like when it just doesn't work. You lost me at Juju Man, Bono. Why are you bringing a cockatoo into it? I don't go to YouTube for spoken word, especially bad spoken word. I mean, this song is for people who look forward to the smell of their own farts and are oblivious to the impact that the smell has on other people around them. It's just insane. It's insufferable.
For the win.
That's a great description of these bad U2 songs, is Bono is farting and, you know, he doesn't really, the smell doesn't bother him, but everybody else has to smell it. That's a great analogy. Yeah.
And speaking of bad analogies, I mean, this song's just full of bad analogies.
I'd rather listen to Bono fart into the mic than listen to Miami, though, so.
When this song comes on, I don't know if he's fucking with me or if he's serious. And I'm like, what kind of headspace do you need to be in to not know that this sucks? I mean, you've made like New Year's Day. You've made like Pride in the Name of Love. You've made With or Without You. You've made Mysterious Ways. So many great, awesome songs. You can't tell that this thing is a half-baked, moronic, insufferable B-side at best. I just don't understand it all. That's all I got on that one.
That's it. It's always the real fans who know how to rant against some hated songs, you know?
Well, when you guys did your Kiss show, even though I'm not a huge fan of Kiss, like, that was the part that was cool for me, was that you could be honest and acknowledge Kiss's bullshit. So, this is my version of that.
I love it.
Juju Man, Docs is your final diet. But I'm running down the road like loose electricity, while the band in my head plays a striptease. Oh, oh.
There you go.
All right, so I guess, BJ, your number one's already gone.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah.
All right, yeah. So I'll give you my number one then. My number one was mentioned briefly earlier, but was not in anybody's list. My number one made me angry when I heard this song. And I could truly, I guess it was probably I saw the music video for this song, and it pissed me off because I liked Achtung Baby. I liked a lot of it. Yeah. And then when I saw the video for Numb, holy fuck, it pissed me off. Like, that's so fucking terrible. And they made it a single. It was so bad. It was unforgivably bad.
This is what they led off their album with to the public.
So crazy. Fuck, I couldn't believe it when I saw this. Terrible song.
That video, they got like dude's feet on Edge's face and he's just taking it. And like, then Bob, like singing falsetto into his face, just taking it.
Like, what the hell? Now, there may be worse songs by this band throughout their career, but no song has ever made me as angry as this song, which is why when we just, you know, when I heard it was going to be U2, that was my number one song. Boom. Okay, I got my number one. Now I'm going to backfill the other five or other four because there was no way that it was going to be anything but Numb as my number one song because that's fucking terrible. Get on board, don't fall on your surge, just play another chord. If you feel it getting bored, don't change your brain, don't listen to the band, don't change your shit. Have another chord.
As I've gotten older, this song's not aged well. I may have liked it when I was a teenager and didn't know any better. But yeah, this is like, I don't know what the band thought. The band must have thought it could done anything to throw this out as a single. They must have felt like bulletproof.
Like, I dare you to like this, people.
It takes a lot of hubris to not only record it the way they recorded it, but to like have it be your single. That's, I agree with what you said. Not a great song.
Well, yeah, like I said, that was almost on my list. So
how could it not be on anybody? Like, it's got to be on your list. What the hell are you thinking, BJ?
Well, it's like all this stuff on Zooropa, or most of the stuff on Zooropa and Pop is like that, where it's it doesn't really follow the basic structure that you want from a song. It's just too repetitive and just too simplistic and annoying, and just it's not there's nothing impressive about it.
Well, there's one impressive thing about Numb. It's shorter than 5 minutes.
Yeah,
it's 4:20. It's 4:20.
It didn't come across well. It's just wrong-headed and ham-fisted.
And ham-headed.
Ham-headed. Heavy-fisted.
All right, Randy. There it is. This is your moment. What is the worst U2 song?
There could be no other, and I'm actually amazed that neither of you called this out, because it is so bad that it defies explanation or reason that it could ever see the light of day. And when the band themselves have never played this live. That probably should tell you something right there. But this is off of the album Pop, BJ's favorite. It is the Playboy Mansion. It is the song right after Miami.
Yeah.
So you go from the fire into the frying pan as far as bad U2 songs go. This thing comes on and it sounds like a sequencer is farting out a bass line or something. It's like a leisure suit from the 1970s, but it doesn't fit anymore. The guy's like 50 pounds heavier. but he's still trying to fucking put it on over his fat body, and he's just living in the past. It's kind of like Hugh Hefner in that sense. It's just dumb.
Wow, you're giving us gold tonight.
I don't care who made this song. It could be by like the band I hate the most. It could be by, you know, Creed, or it could be by Nickelback. It's just, it's unforgivable. It's an unforgivable sin. And I got notes, and I'm trying to find them. Where the hell are my notes? Where did you go? Okay. Just the worst. It's the musical equivalent of sharding your pants at a shareholder meeting, and you're wearing white pants. It's a bad idea. Get the fuck out of there. Wear an adult diaper. Do whatever you got to do. Don't put this on your fucking album ever. Just terrible. There's nothing redeeming about it. I mean, when I first heard it, I heard this song on the radio. Like, you know how these radio stations back in the day would get the album before it came out, and they would play you songs, you know, from the album. They played this song, and I was like, oh man, we're in trouble. And this is as like a super U2 fan. In 1997, like, I was the biggest U2 fan you'd find walking the streets. And I knew this thing was a piece of shit in 1997. It has not aged well at all. And it was fucked in the beginning. So don't ever play this unless you want to clear out a room. I wake up, she come around. Chance is a kind of religion. We're down for playing hard luck. I never did see that movie. I never did read that book. Love, come on down. I let my numbers come around. Don't know if I can hold on. Don't know if I'm that strong.
Okay, Randy, so if you take the album Pop and you remove track 8 and 9, Miami and the Playboy Mansion, still leaving you with 10 songs, is that album become good?
Fuck no. I would say that the album title Pop is just missing an O.
You guys hear me?
I see what you did there.
But BJ, why would you call it Popo? So I think if to answer your question, Brian, if you were to remove those two songs, I think it'd be like a 3.5-star album because it's got songs on there.
Out of 10?
there's about 4 or 5 songs on there I think are legitimately good songs. It needed remixing, and they kept remixing the singles, and that told me right there that they didn't take the time to actually finish the album the way they wanted. And I think it suffered for that. So,
yeah, who produced that shit? Who produced Europa and Pop?
Good.
Flood did both of them?
Yeah.
Fucking hack.
Yeah, man. Flood, man. He was trying to help him, but apparently it didn't do anything for BJ, so. But, yeah, I mean, I think that's a fairly good representative list from a fan, a guy who likes early U2, and then, what would you call yourself, Brian, like a layman?
Yeah, pretty much. I got albums I know well, and then there's a bunch that I had to go back for this and kind of take a listen to, possibly for the first time, outside of the singles.
Hardest $50 you ever made, huh?
Yeah.
I love U2 up through Well, especially Joshua Tree. I mean, there's a couple good songs on Rattle and Hum, but there's a lot of bad shit on there. But I like most of Achtung Baby too. Like, I mean, I love Zoo Station, and I think One is an amazing song. But,
yeah, I agree.
You know, the song Bad from Unforgettable Fire, I just love. There's a lot of great U2 stuff. So,
yeah, that's a great one. Yeah. You're right. If you guys, if you listeners want to see my favorite U2 songs, you can go on my website, thatdandyclassicmusichour.com, and do a search for U2, and you'll see my top 25 favorite U2 songs. So if you're so inclined or bored, do that.
Yeah, I think we definitely have a consensus here that, I mean, Miami is the worst in a democratic sense. Miami is clearly the worst U2 song. Since
it was the lone song on all three lists, and it was high, as Brian pointed out.
Yeah. So,
but I'm amazed that three people, which I think are, I don't know. It seems like Randy's a big fan, and you're a medium fan. BJ's a medium fan, and I'm a light fan, but I was surprised at how consistent the lists were. Outside of just a couple of my songs, which Randy likes, but for the most part, that we were pretty much on the same page.
I mean, Bad U2 is pretty unmistakable, I've decided.
Well, I mean, and you had the one song from October, but otherwise everything was from the late period, right? Well, and also When Love Comes to Town, of course, from my list, but...
Yeah, mine was all late.
Yeah. I could have picked four or five songs just from No Line on the Horizon. That album's just so bad. But I ended up just picking the one. But yeah, that album's full of bullshit. Kind of like Brian Sword's initials, just full of BS.
I know. I will point out that we talk about how late stage and later U2. You know, Zooropo is from 1993.
Yeah.
You know? So we're talking 25 years of...
Yeah.
A lot of all this crap is from the last 25 years. That's a pretty big period of time.
Well, they've really, from my point of view, they haven't done anything very impressive since Achtung Baby. I don't know what happened to cause that. I mean, they definitely went off on some tangents there, but then when they tried to go back to their more classic sound, they never really recaptured it, not even close. So
I think every band has a finite lifespan where they just make that kind of music with passion, and it's like an all for one, one for all kind of vibe. When you get older, you start getting money and families, and it becomes more commerce than anything. Even your intentions are pure, life just gets in the way a lot more, and it's hard to be hungry when you're full, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So that's why I think any band, look at a band like the Rolling Stones. I mean, it's just hard to just keep that momentum going indefinitely.
Fair enough.
So.
Yeah, but I don't think people really think of it in these terms, but U2 start out as practically a punk band, and definitely they were a very highly respected post-punk band in the early years, and you know, so their image has obviously changed quite a bit over time, but you know,
it's because Love came to town.
yeah, but they came right out of the punk scene. And, I mean, Boy is an incredible album. It's really great.
Yeah, it is a good... Yeah, there's a lot of good stuff on Boy.
And then the way they really... Like you said, they... On War, they really, like, matured, and they changed a lot, but... And they made really, really interesting, impressive albums up to a point. Then they just fell off a cliff. I don't really know.
Really, like, grasping for the ring... for a long time, and when they finally got it, you know, it's just hard. Like, it's like, I'll give you a sports analogy, guys. I bet you guys aren't huge sports fans, but I am. It's like when you're a championship team, everybody just starts gunning for you, and it's not even other bands, it's just agents, it's just fans, it's just all this other bullshit becomes your life, and the music becomes almost secondary to a point. And that, I think that just happens to all of them. I mean, name me one band that is as good on their 14th album as it was on its second, third, fourth album. I mean, I don't think there are any.
We're an Irish band. We come from Dublin City, Ireland. Like all cities, It has its good. It has its bad. This is a song called Bad.
Yeah, so Randy, people can check you out at That Dandy Classic Music Hour. You've got a couple U2 episodes, like you said, and you guys cover a lot of different kinds of music. And,
We just did Marvin Gaye's What's Going On. We got a lot of stuff out there. We've been around for 2+ years now. If there's a popular band you like, there's a great chance that we reviewed an album by them. Me and my buddy Dan Menard, we do track by track a lot. We do have some list shows, but our kind of thing is we do track by track album reviews, but we do it with like an irreverent spin. That Dandy Classic Music Hour, just put in Dandy Classic Music in any search engine and we will come up.
And Brian, when is the Double Stop coming back?
Soon.
Good.
How many times am I going to say it? No, it is coming back and I'm booking some interviews now. The big project that I had that was taking all my time was pretty much done, so things are going to free up again. Awesome. I've been staring down the barrel of episode 100 for a while now, and I'm going to cross over shortly.
Awesome, man. I'm really looking forward to hearing more.
Hey, DJ, are you ready to talk about Cheap Trick's debut album at the Rockin' Pod Expo? We plan on having you on. We want to take that with you when we're there, if that's possible.
Yeah, sure.
Yeah, baby. It's on like Tron.
Yeah, we're all going to be at the Nashville Rock and Pod Expo, so everybody listening, please go to the GoFundMe page for that. And it's still there if you want to go chip in $10 and help us reach our goal, because not only are we doing it this year, but we're hoping to keep it going as maybe an annual thing. So
that would be dope.
So that is still in progress. The GoFundMe is still in progress. We're still looking for some support for that. It's gone really great, and it's definitely happening. It's on like Tron, but we'd still like to reach the goal. So,
hell yeah! Come on, people. What? How you get all these free podcasts? It's not going to hurt you to donate $20. I mean, what's $20? Dinner out with a combo meal at Wendy's with your family? Come on, man.
You could buy a Pop and Zuropa for $20.
If you go down to McKay's here in Nashville, you probably get a boat for $1, but
yeah, right.
You know.
Yeah. Hey, BJ, has anybody purchased the worst of Cheap Trick yet?
No.
People. People. Don't you want to hear BJ talk shit about Cheap Trick? Come on.
You know what else we should throw out there is they could purchase a best of.
Oh, no, no. Hootie and the Blowfish.
Yeah, like Randy mentioned Creed earlier. Like, that would be a good one.
Oh, God, don't make me listen to Creed.
Yeah, because eventually...
Okay, BJ, those episodes are $100. Forgot this.
All right, $100. Yeah, because, yeah, good point.
I'm going to have to listen to Creed.
Good point. All right, so if you go to the GoFundMe, contribute $100, you could pick anyone, any artist, and we will have to pick the best 5 songs from that. Because we're eventually going to flip this worst of on its head and do best of the shittiest. So yeah, I like this challenge. $100, the worst possible band you could think of to make us pick our 5 favorite songs by. Maybe we'll actually get some, because that would be fun.
those piano players that Randy mentioned, was Yanni, and there's a couple of other ones.
Yeah, John Tesh.
John Tesh.
Best of John
Tesh.
Yeah,
best of John Tesh.
That's a tough ask.
Oh, like, kill me. Yeah.
No, I really enjoy listening to your guys' worst of episodes, and it's been a profound pleasure to join you to do one of my favorite bands. So I appreciate y'all indulging me, even if it was for $50. It was for a great cause.
All right, well, thanks guys for talking the worst of you two with me.
But BJ, I look forward to meeting you and BS down there at the Rockin' Pod.
Yeah, can't wait.
Can't Seems wait. Great.
Who's gonna hang on? Be back.